Hachette Audio presents A Big Moon Cake for Little Star. Written by Grace Lynn. Read by Emma Lisi.
Little Star's mama laid the big moon cake onto the night sky to cool. "Now, Little Star," Mama said, "your moon cake took us a long time to bake, so let's see if you can make it last a while. Can you remember not to touch this big moon cake until I tell you to?" "Yes, Mama," Little Star said, nodding. And Little Star remembered as she brushed her teeth, washed her face, snuggled into bed, and fell asleep. But in the middle of the night, Little Star woke up. She forgot everything her mama had said and only remembered the big moon cake. Pat, pat, pat. Little Star's soft feet tiptoed to the big moon cake. Would her mama notice if she took a tiny nibble? Little Star didn't think so. Mmm, yum. But was someone coming? Little Star flew back to bed. The next night, Little Star remembered the big moon cake again. That one bite had been so sweet and tasty. Was the cake still there? Yes, it was. There was that big moon cake, an almost perfect circle, all alone and delicious in the sky. Would her mama notice if she took another tiny nibble? Little Star didn't think so. Yum! Little Star flew back to bed. And the next night, what do you think Little Star remembered? The big moon cake, of course. Would Mama notice if she took another tiny nibble? Little Star didn't think so. Yum! And the night after that, what did Little Star do? Nibble, nibble, yum! Night after night, Little Star took tiny nibble after tiny nibble of the big moon cake. Until one night, Little Star's mama went to look for the big moon cake. Where was it? It was gone. Instead of a glowing round cake, there was just a trail of twinkling crumbs. "Little Star," her mama said, shaking her head even though her mouth was curving. "You ate the big moon cake again, didn't you?" Little Star looked up, her grin reflecting her mama's smile. "Yes, Mama," Little Star said, nodding. "Now let's go make another one."
This has been a Hachette Audio production of A Big Moon Cake for Little Star. Written by Grace Lynn. Read by Emma Lisi. Produced by Findaway Voices. A Big Moon Cake for Little Star is also available in print and as an ebook from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette Audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2018 by Grace Lynn. Audio production copyright 2020 by Hachette Audio. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook other than for review purposes, please contact permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
ICANN is sponsored by Oregon Association for Talented and Gifted, a grassroots nonprofit statewide membership organization dedicated to equity and excellence in education. OTEG advocates for the needs of our talented and gifted students and serves as a resource for families, educators, and communities. You can learn more at oatag.org.
Broadcasting from the Moonflower Studio.
KQAC HD2 Portland 89.9.
KQOC HD2 Glenydon Beach 88.1.
KSLC HD2 McMinnville 90.3.
And KQHR HD2 The Dells and Hood River 88.1.
Elephants are useful friends, equipped with handles at both ends. They have a wrinkled, moth-proof hide. Their teeth are upside down, outside. If you think the elephant preposterous, you've probably never seen a rhinoceros. The kangaroo can jump incredible. He has to jump because he's edible. I could not eat a kangaroo, but many fine Australians do. Those with cookbooks, as well as boomerangs, prefer him in tasty kangaroo meringues.
Thank you.
Some fish are minnows, some are whales. People like dimples, fish like scales. Some fish are slim, and some are round. They don't get cold, they don't get drowned. But every fishwife is jealous for her fish of what we call mermaids, and they call merfish. In the world of mules, there are no rules. Cuckoos lead bohemian lives. They fail as husbands and as wives. Therefore, they cynically disparage everybody else's marriage. Puccini was Latin and Wagner Teutonic, and birds are incurably philharmonic. Suburban yards and rural vistas are filled with avian Andrews sisters. The skylark sings a rondelay. The crow sings the road to Mandalay. The nightingale sings a lullaby, and the seagull sings a gullaby. That's what shepherds listen to in Arcadia before somebody invented the radio. Some claim that pianists are human, and quote the case of Mr. Truman. Saint-Saëns, upon the other hand, considered them a scurvy band. Ape-like they are, he said, and simian, instead of normal men and women. At midnight in the museum hall, the fossils gathered for a ball. There were no drums or saxophones, but just the clatter of their bones. A rolling, rattling, carefree circus of mammoth polkas and mazurkas. Pterodactyls and brontosauruses sang ghostly prehistoric choruses. Amid the mastodonic wassail, I caught the eye of one small fossil. Cheer up, sad world, he said and winked. It's kind of fun to be extinct. Thank you. The swan can swim while sitting down. For pure conceit, she takes the crown. She looks in the mirror over and over and claims never to have heard of Pavlova. Now we've reached the grand finale, Animale Carnivale. Noises new to sea and land issue from the skillful band. All the strings contort their features, imitating crawly creatures. All the brasses look like mumps from blowing oompa, oompa, umps. In outdoing Barnum and Bailey and Ringling, Saint-Saëns has done a miraculous thingling.
Thank you. Camille Saint-Saëns was 51 years old when he composed The Carnival of the Animals. Originally, it had no narration. Saint-Saëns dashed it off for a Mardi Gras party, calling it a zoological fantasy, and, being an extraordinary pianist himself, played one of the two piano parts. Camille Saint-Saëns was born in Paris in 1835. His father died shortly after he was born, and an aunt soon moved in to help his mother. When he was two, his aunt began to give him piano lessons, and she quickly discovered that he had perfect pitch. However, that was not all that she and his mother discovered. Little Camille was both reading and writing by the age of three, and by four, he had written his first musical composition. You can actually see the manuscript at the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris. He began formal piano lessons at the age of seven, and soon gave his first public performance, playing the piano accompaniment to a Beethoven violin sonata. Not easy music. When he was 10, he gave a recital at the famous Salle Pleyel in Paris. At the end of the recital, he turned to the audience in this huge concert hall and said, in French of course, "I can play all 32 Beethoven piano sonatas from memory, so pick anyone and I will play it for you." Needless to say, word quickly spread that there was a young musical genius in Paris. Saint-Saëns was admitted to the Paris Conservatory in his early teens. There he studied both organ and composition. At 16, he composed not his first, but his second symphony. When the famous composer Hector Berlioz heard it, he simply commented, "He knows everything. He just lacks experience." But like most composers, Saint-Saëns needed a day job, so he became a church organist, and by the age of 22, he had become the organist in one of the most famous churches in Paris, La Madeleine. Saint-Saëns was indeed a genius, for his brilliance was not confined to music. In addition to composing, performing, and writing musical criticism, he found time to be extremely well-versed in geology, archaeology, botany, lepidoptery, the study of butterflies, and mathematics. He wrote articles on acoustics, Roman theater decoration, and early instruments. He also gave lectures on the nature of mirages and had a telescope made to his own specifications. Saint-Saëns was good friends with the most famous musicians of his day, the great pianist and composer Franz Liszt, as well as composers like Fauré, Berlioz, Wagner, and Rossini. Many came to the church of La Madeleine to hear his improvisations on the organ, and, not surprisingly, he was called the greatest organist of his time. But beyond all that, it was when he sat down and sight-read the full orchestral scores of Wagner's great and complex operas, Siegfried, Lohengrin, Tristan and Isolde, that the great conductor Hans von Bülow went a step further, declaring, "Saint-Saëns is the greatest musical mind of our era." Despite all of his professional success, Saint-Saëns had a very unhappy personal life. He had a short, disastrous marriage, and his two young children died within 6 weeks of each other, one falling out of a fourth-floor window. Nevertheless, life did move on. As he traveled widely, his musical reputation spread throughout Europe. He was always very popular in England, and he traveled as far west as San Francisco, where he conducted the San Francisco Symphony. During his later years, he moved to Algiers, where, in 1921, at the end of a very long and productive life, he died at the age of 86. Saint-Saëns composed over 300 works in every possible musical genre: symphonies, operas, concertos, sonatas. He was the first serious composer to write music for silent movies and was also the earliest born composer to have his music recorded. Ironically, Saint-Saëns today is best known for The Carnival of the Animals, the single work that he refused to allow to be performed publicly or even published during his lifetime. Saint-Saëns was afraid that if people knew that he had written this very funny piece of music, they would no longer think of him as a serious composer. Instead, contrary to all his fears, the world understood the brilliance of this work, and it remains to this day his most famous composition.
Hello, this is Stephen Simon. I am the conductor of the London Philharmonic Orchestra for these recordings, and I am here to tell you some things about the music. Let me introduce the cast. Originally, The Carnival of the Animals was composed for only 11 players. After all, it was for a party, not a performance in a concert hall. Two solo pianists sat at two grand pianos. In addition, there were five string players, two violins, viola, cello, and double bass, plus one flute, one clarinet, one xylophone, and a glass harmonica, an instrument replaced by the celeste, or orchestra bells, in the modern orchestra. In this recording, as with most performances, the five string players are replaced by the string section of the orchestra to give a symphonic heft to the sound, but the major role of soloists is still given to the two pianos. Have you ever heard of onomatopoeia? This is when a word is made up to imitate a sound. When someone writes bow-wow, it is supposed to be the sound of a barking dog. And when you read meow, you know that there is a cat in the room and not a chicken. In the case of The Carnival of the Animals, Saint-Saëns employs musical onomatopoeia, using musical instruments to imitate animal sounds in a comical fashion. The pianos make lion-like roars. The violins cluck like the hens they are imitating. While the clarinet imitates the rooster and the cuckoo. And the pianos imitate the race-like speed of the onager, which is a Central Asian donkey. These are not the sounds you find in a Beethoven symphony. Another way to express humor is through using musical quotations, tunes lifted from other musical compositions. Saint-Saëns takes a frothy, bubbling can-can from a popular opera by Jacques Offenbach. And then slows it down to a painfully slow speed and has it played by the double basses. You can just picture the tortoises trying to dance the can-can. But after all, tortoises can't dance the can-can, can they? When Saint-Saëns quotes the Dance of the Sylphs from the opera The Damnation of Faust by his good friend Hector Berlioz, he gives the tune to the double basses and uses it as dance music for the elephant. Just think about this. Sylphs are slim, graceful, fairy-like creatures. So isn't it funny to picture an elephant dancing to this delicate tune? Here are some other humorous moments that I would like to point out. Saint-Saëns portrays the kangaroos jumping about on their wonderfully large hind feet. with the two pianists playing separated jumping chords back and forth. He describes the shimmering water in the aquarium with the pianos playing running arpeggios and the bells and flute playing the offbeats, giving the feel of bursts of light as the sun hits the water. The sound of braying mules is described by the weird harmonic glissandos, the he, followed by the lower notes on the G string, the ha, played by the violins. Many composers have used flutes to imitate birds singing, and Saint-Saëns is no exception. This portrayal of birds by the flute, however, is notorious among flutists for its difficulty. The clattering of the fossil's bones is represented by the xylophones. The final humorous animals included in Saint-Saëns' zoo are his fellow pianists. Saint-Saëns is poking fun at their need to incessantly practice scales and exercises. In the end, Saint-Saëns could not resist including one elegant musical portrait. The magnificent swan is portrayed by the cello in this iconic solo, so beautiful that it has become the best-known cello solo ever composed. It was the one part of the Carnival of the Animals that Saint-Saëns allowed to be published during his lifetime. So there you have it, Saint-Saëns' salute to feathers, furs, and fins. Now listen to the entire work again, as it was originally composed without any narration. And this time, imagine your very own Carnival of the Animals.
Thank you.